Remember Me, Disc 5.
Della Carpets is the company everyone remembers from the TV ads back in the 80s. The first one showed a woman lying on some blue, swirling, patterned carpet in a shop, pretending it was so soft and luxurious she immediately had to have sex on it with the nerdy sales assistant. Then there was the follow-up ad, where she married the nerdy assistant and had the whole aisle carpeted in flowery Della carpet. And then they had twins, who couldn't sleep unless they had blue and pink Della carpet in their cots. They were pretty tacky ads, but they did make Della Carpets a household name, which is part of its trouble. The company tried to change its name a few years ago to just Della. There was a new logo and mission statement and everything, but nobody takes any notice of that. You say you work at Della, and they frown and then say, "You mean Della Carpets?" It's even more ironic because Carpets is only a fraction of the company these days. About 10 years ago, the maintenance department started producing a carpet cleaner which was sold by mail order and became incredibly popular. They expanded into all sorts of cleaning products and gadgets, and now the mail order business is huge. So are soft furnishings and fabrics. But poor old carpets have fallen by the wayside. Trouble is, they're not cool these days, carpets. It's all slate and laminate wood flooring. We do sell laminate flooring, but hardly anyone realises we do because they think we're still called Della Carpets. It's like one big vicious circle which always leads back to Shagpile. I know carpets aren't cool. And I know patterned carpets are even less cool. But secretly, I really love them, especially all the old retro designs from the 70s. I've got an old pattern book on my desk which I always flick through when I'm in the middle of a long, tedious phone conversation. And once I found a whole box of old samples at the warehouse. No one wanted them, so I took them back to the office and pinned them up on the wall next to my desk. That's to say, my old desk. I guess I've been upgraded now. As I head towards the familiar building on Victoria Palace Road, I feel a fizz of anticipation in my stomach. It's the same as it ever was. A tall, pale grey block with granite pillars at the entrance. I push open the glass doors to reception and stop in surprise. The foyer is different. It looks really cool. They've moved the desk and there are glass partitions where there used to be a wall, and the flooring is blue metallic effect vinyl. There must be a new range out. Lexi! A plump woman in a pink shirt and tapered black trousers is bustling towards me. She has highlights and fuchsia lipstick and court shoes, and she's called, I know her, Head of Human Resources. Dana! I gasped the name in relief. Hi! Lexi! She holds out a hand to shake mine. Welcome back, you poor thing. We were all so upset to hear what happened.
I'm fine, thanks. A lot better.
I follow her over the shiny vinyl floor, take a security pass from her, and swipe my way through the security entrance. This is all new, too. We didn't used to have barriers, just a guard called Reg.
Good. Well, come this way.
Dana's ushering me along.
I thought we could have a short chat in my office. Pop in on the budget meeting, and then you'll want to see your department.
Great. Good idea. My department. I used to just have a desk and stapler. We travel up in the lift, get out at the second floor, and Dana ushers me into her office.
Take a seat.
She pulls out a plushy chair and sits down at her desk.
So now, obviously, we need to talk about your condition.
She lowers her voice discreetly, as though I have some embarrassing ailment.
You have amnesia.
That's right. Apart from that, I'm pretty much okay.
Good. She scribbles something on her pad of paper. And is this amnesia permanent or temporary?
Well, the doctor said I might start remembering things at any time.
Marvellous!
Her face brightens.
Obviously, from our point of view, it would be great if he could remember everything by the 21st. That's when our sales conference is,
she adds, giving me an expectant look. Right, I say, after a pause. I'll do my best.
You can't do better than that.
She trills with laughter and pushes back her chair.
Now, let's go and say hello to Simon and the others. You remember Simon Johnson, the MD?
Of course. How could I not remember the boss of the whole company? I remember him giving a speech at the Christmas party. I remember him appearing in our office and asking our names while Gavin, our department head then, followed him around like a lackey. And now I go to meetings with him. Trying to conceal my nerves, I follow Dana down the corridor and up in the lift again to the 8th floor. She leads me briskly to the boardroom, knocks on the heavy door and pushes it open.
Sorry to interrupt, only Lexi's popped in for a visit. Lexi, our superstar.
Simon Johnson stands up from his seat at the head of the table. He has a tall, broad-shouldered, ex-army officer frame and thinning brown hair. He comes over, clasps my hand as if we're old friends, and kisses my cheek.
How are you feeling, my dear?
Simon Johnson just kissed me. The MD of the whole company kissed me. Fine, thanks. I try to keep my composure. Much better. I glance around the room, taking in a whole bunch of other high-powered company people in suits. Byron, who used to be my direct boss, is sitting on the other side of the conference table. He's pale and lanky with dark hair and wearing one of his trademark retro print ties. He gives me a pinched smile and I grin back, relieved to recognise someone.
You had quite a knock to their head, we understand.
Simon Johnson is saying in his mellifluous public school voice. That's right.
Well, hurry back,
he exclaims with mock urgency.
Byron here is standing in for you very well.
He gestures at Byron.
But whether you can trust him to safeguard your departmental budget...
I don't know. I raise my eyebrows. Should I be worried? There's an appreciative laugh around the table, and I notice Byron shooting me daggers. Honestly, I was only making a joke.
Seriously, though, Lexi, I need to talk to you about our recent discussions.
Simon Johnson gives me a meaningful nod.
We'll have lunch when you get back properly.
Absolutely. I match his confidential tone, even though I have no idea what he's talking about.
Simon.
Dana steps forward discreetly.
The doctors don't know whether Lexi's amnesia is permanent or temporary, so she may have some problems with memory.
Probably an advantage in this business,
puts in a balding man opposite, and there's another chuckle around the table.
Lexi, I have every confidence in you,
says Simon Johnson firmly. He turns to a red-haired guy sitting nearby.
Daniel, you two haven't met yet, have you? Daniel is our new finance controller. Daniel, you might have seen Lexi on television.
That's right. I can see recognition dawning on the guy's face as we shake hands. So, you're the whiz kid I've heard about. Whiz kid? I don't think so, I say uncertainly, and there's a laugh.
Don't be modest.
Simon gives me a warm smile, then turns to Daniel.
This young woman has had the most meteoric rise through this company. From junior sales associate to director of her department within 18 months. As I've said many times to Lexi herself, it was a gamble giving her the job. But I've never regretted taking that risk for a moment. She's a natural leader. She's inspirational. She's put in 24 hours a day. She has some exciting strategic visions for the future. This is a very, very talented member of the company.
As he finishes, Simon is beaming at me. So is the balding guy and a couple of the others. I'm in a state of total shock. My face is puce. My legs are wobbling. No one's ever spoken about me like that. Ever in my whole life. Well, thanks, I stutter at last.
Lexi.
Simon gestures at an empty chair.
Can we tempt you to stay for the budget meeting?
I glance at Dana for help.
She's not staying long today, Simon, says Dana. We're popping down to flooring now.
Of course, Simon Johnson nods. Well, you're missing a treat. Everyone loves a budget meeting.
His eyes crinkle with humour. Don't you realise I did this to avoid the budget meeting? I gesture at the last remaining greys on my head, and there's another huge laugh around the room.
See you soon, Lexi, says Simon Johnson. Look after yourself.
As Dana and I leave the boardroom, I'm light-headed with exhilaration. I can't quite believe all that just happened. I bantered with Simon Johnson. I'm a whiz kid. I have strategic visions for the future. I just hope I wrote them down somewhere.
So, you remember where the flooring department is?
Dana says as we descend again in the lift.
I know everyone's eager to see you.
Me too, I say with growing confidence. We head out of the lift and Dana's phone gives a little chirrup.
Oh dear, she says as she glances at it. I should take this. Do you want to pop along to your office and I'll see you in there?
Absolutely. I stride down the corridor. It looks just the same as it ever did, with the same brown carpet and fire notices and plastic plants. The flooring department is just along to the left, and to the right is Gavin's office. I mean, my office. My own private office. I stand outside the door for a moment, psyching myself to go in. I still can't quite believe it's my office. My job. Come on, there's nothing to be scared of. I can do this job. Simon Johnson said so. As I reach for the door handle, I see a girl of about 20 darting out of the main office. Her hands go to her mouth.
Oh, she says, Lexi, you're back.
Yes. I peer uncertainly at her. You'll have to forgive me. I've had this accident. My memory's gone.
Yeah, they said.
She looks nervous.
I'm Claire, your assistant.
Oh, hi, nice to meet you. So, I'm in here? I jerk my head towards Gavin's door.
That's right. Can I bring you a cup of coffee?
Yes, please. I try to hide my delight. That would be great. I have an assistant who brings me cups of coffee. I have really, really made it. I step into the office and let the door close behind me with a satisfying clunk. Wow! I'd forgotten how big this room was. It has a sweeping desk and a plant and a sofa and everything. I put my briefcase down on the desk and walk over to the window. I even have a view of another tall building, admittedly. But still, it's mine. I'm the boss. I can't help laughing in euphoria as I swing round and jump onto the sofa. I bounce up and down a few times, then stop abruptly as there's a knocking on the door. Shit! If someone walked in right now and saw me... Catching my breath, I hurry over to the desk, pick up a random piece of paper and start perusing it with a businesslike frown.
Come in! Lexi!
Dana bustles in.
Are you making yourself at home again? Claire told me you didn't even recognise her. This is going to be tricky for you, isn't it? I hadn't quite appreciated...
She shakes her head, her brow creased.
So, you don't remember anything?
Well, no, I admit. But I'm sure it'll all come back to me sooner or later.
Let's hope you're right.
She still looks anxious.
Now, let's go through to the department. Reacquaint yourself with everybody.
We head out, and I suddenly see Fee coming out of the flooring office in a short black skirt with boots and a green sleeveless top. She looks different from the way I remember her, with a new red streak in her hair and a thinner face somehow. But it's her. She's even wearing the same set of tortoiseshell bangles she always used to. Fee! I exclaim in excitement, almost dropping my bag. Oh my God, it's me, Lexi! Hi, I'm back! Fee visibly starts. She turns, and for a few seconds just gapes at me as if I'm a lunatic. I suppose I did sound a bit overexcited, but I'm just so thrilled to see her.
Hi, Lexi,
she says at last, eyeing my face.
How are you doing?
I'm fine, I say, my words tumbling out eagerly. How are you? You look great. I love your new hair. Everyone's staring at me now. Anyway, I force myself to sound more composed. Maybe we can catch up properly later, with the others?
Yeah.
Fee nods, without looking me in the eye. Why is she being so off? What's wrong? Coldness clenches me round the chest. Maybe that's why she never replied to any of my messages. We've had some huge row, and the others took her side, and I just don't remember.
After you, Lexi.
Dana ushers me into the main open-plan office. 15 faces look up at us, and I try not to gasp. This is so weird. I can see Carolyn and Debs and Melanie and several others I know. They all look familiar, but 3 years on. Their hair and makeup and clothes all look different. Debs has super-toned arms and is tanned as though she's just got back from some exotic holiday. Carolyn's wearing new rimless glasses, and her hair's cropped even shorter than before. There's my desk. A girl with bleached hair and braids is sitting at it, looking totally at home.
You all know that Lexi has been ill following her accident,
Dana is announcing to the room.
We're delighted that she's back with us today for a visit. She suffered a few side effects from her injuries, in particular amnesia. But I'm sure you'll all help her to remember her way around and give her a big welcome back.
She turns to me and murmurs,
Lexi, do you want to say a few motivational words to the department?
Motivational words? I echo uncertainly.
Just something inspiring. Dana beams. Rally the troops.
Her phone chirrups again.
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
She hurries out to the corridor and I'm left alone, facing my department. Come on. Simon Johnson says I'm a natural leader. I can do this. Hi, everyone. I give a small wave around the office, which no one returns. I just wanted to say that I'll be back soon and, keep up the good work. I flounder for something motivational. Who's the best department in the company? We are. Who rocks? Flooring. I give the air a little punch like a cheerleader.
F-L-O-R.
It should be another O, interrupts a girl I don't recognise. She's standing with her arms folded, looking totally unimpressed.
Sorry?
I stop, breathless. There's a double O in flooring. She rolls her eyes. Two girls next to her are giggling into their hands, while Carolyn and Debs are just gaping at me.
Right, I say, flustered. Anyway, well done, everybody. You've all done a great job.
So are you back now, Letsy?
Demands a girl in red.
Not exactly. Only I need my expenses form signed, urgently.
Me too,
say about six people.
Have you spoken to Simon about our targets?
Melanie is coming forward, frowning.
Only they're totally unworkable as they are. What's happening about the new computers?
Did you read my email?
Have we sorted the Thorn Group order?
Suddenly everyone in the room seems to be swarming towards me, asking questions. I can hardly follow any of them, let alone understand what they mean.
I don't know, I'm saying desperately. I'm sorry, I can't remember. I'll see you later.
Breathing hard, I back out across the corridor and into my own office and slam the door.
Shit! What was all that about?
There's a knock at the door.
Hello?
I call out, my voice strangled.
Hi,
says Claire, coming in under a vast pile of letters and documents.
Sorry to bother you, Lexi, but while you're here, could you just have a quick run-through of these? You need to get back to Tony Duke's from Bilton's and authorise the payment to Sixpack and sign these waivers, and some guy called Jeremy Northpool has rung several times, says he hopes you can resume discussions.
She's holding out a pen. She's expecting me to spring into action.
I can't authorise anything, I say in panic. I can't sign anything. I've never heard of Tony Duke's. I don't remember any of this stuff.
Oh. Claire's pile of papers drops slightly as she surveys me, wide-eyed.
Well, who's going to run the department?
I don't know. I mean, me. It's my job. I'll do it. I just need a bit of time. Look, leave all that with me. I try to pull myself together. I'll have a read through. Maybe it'll come back to me.
Okay,
says Claire, clearly relieved. She dumps the pile of papers on the desk.
I'll just bring your coffee through.
My head spinning, I sit down at the desk and pick up the first letter. It's all about some ongoing complaint. As you will be aware, expect your immediate response. I turn to the next document. It's a monthly budget forecast for all the departments in the company. There are six graphs and a post-it on which someone has scribbled, "Could I get your views, Lexi?"
Your coffee.
Claire taps on the door. Ah, yes, I say, summoning a boss-like tone. Thank you, Claire. As she puts down the cup, I nod at the graphs. Very interesting. I'll formulate my response to them later. The minute she's gone, I drop my head down on the desk in despair. What am I going to do? This job is really hard. I mean, it's really, really hard.
How on earth do I do it? How do I know what to say and what decisions to make?
There's yet another knocking at the door, and I hastily sit bolt upright, grabbing a bit of paper at random.
Everything all right, Lexi?
It's Byron, holding a bottle of water and a sheaf of papers. He leans against the doorframe, his bony wrists protruding from his white shirt. Round one of them is an outsize high-tech watch, which I'm sure cost a lot, but looks ridiculous.
Fine. Great. I thought you were in the budget meeting.
We've broken for lunch.
He has this sarcastic, drawling way of speaking, as though you're a total moron. Truth be told, I never got on with Byron. Now his eye is running over the pile of papers on my desk.
Back at it already, I see.
Not really. I smile, but he doesn't return it.
Have you decided what to do about Tony Jukes? Because accounts were on to me yesterday.
Well, I hesitate. Actually, I don't quite... I'm not...
I swallow, feeling colour sweep through my face.
The thing is, I've had amnesia since my accident and...
I trail off, twisting my fingers into knots. Byron's face suddenly snaps in comprehension. Jesus, he says after surveying me for a moment. You don't know who Tony Jukes is, do you?
Tony Jukes. Tony Jukes. I rack my brain frantically, but nothing. Well, no. But if you could just remind me?
Byron ignores me. He comes further into the room, tapping his water bottle against his palm, his forehead creased in an appraising frown.
Let me get this straight, he says slowly. You remember absolutely nothing?
All my instincts are prickling. He's like a cat prodding a mouse, working out exactly how weak its prey is.
He wants my job.
As soon as it hits me, I feel like a total idiot for not having worked that one out before.
Of course he does.
I leapfrogged over him. He must totally loathe me underneath that polite, pleasant veneer.
I don't remember nothing, I exclaim quickly, as if the very idea is ridiculous.
Just the last 3 years is a bit of a blank.
The last 3 years?
Byron throws back his head and laughs incredulously.
I'm sorry, Lexi, but you know as well as I do in this business 3 years is a lifetime.
Well, I'll soon pick it all up again, I say, trying to sound robust. And the doctor said I might remember everything at any time.
Or presumably you might not.
He adopts a concerned, sympathetic expression.
That must be a great worry for you, Lexi, that your head will be blank forever.
I meet his gaze with as much steel as I can muster. Nice try, but you're not going to freak me out that easily.
I'm sure I'll be back to normal very soon, I say briskly. Back to work, running the department. I was having a great chat with Simon Johnson earlier,
I throw in for good measure.
Uh-huh.
He taps the water bottle thoughtfully.
So, what do you want to do about Tony Jukes?
Fuck. He's outmaneuvered me. There's nothing I can say about Tony Jukes and he knows it. I shuffle the papers on my desk, playing for time.
Maybe... you could make a decision on that?
I say at last.
I'd be happy to.
He gives me a patronising smile.
I'll take care of everything. You just look after yourself, Lexi. Get yourself better. Take as much time as you need. Don't worry about a thing.
Well, thank you.
I force a pleasant tone. I appreciate it, Byron.
So, Dana appears at the door. Are you two having a nice chat, catching up with things, Lexi?
Absolutely,
I smile, my teeth gritted. Byron's being very helpful.
Anything I can do to help?
He spreads his arms in a self-deprecating gesture.
I'm right here. Memory intact.
Super.
Dana glances at her watch.
Now, Lexi, I have to shoot off to lunch, but I can see you out if we leave now.
Don't worry, Dana, I say quickly. I'll stay on here a bit longer and read through some paperwork. I'm not leaving this building without talking to Fee. No way.
Okie doke,
she beams.
Well, lovely to see you, Lexi, and let's talk on the phone about when you want to return properly.
She does the phone under chin gesture, and I find myself copying it. Talk soon. The two of them walk away, and I hear Byron saying,
Donna, may I have a word? We need to discuss this situation with the greatest respect to Lexi.
My office door shuts and I tiptoe towards it. I open it a chink and poke my head out.
She's clearly not fit to lead this department.
Byron's voice is audible as he and Dana turn the corner towards the lifts.
Bastard! He didn't even bother waiting until he was out of earshot.
I head back into my office, slump down at the desk, and bury my head in my hands. All my euphoria has vanished. I have no idea how I ever got this job. I lift a paper at random from the heap in front of me and stare at it. It's something about insurance premiums.
How do I know all this stuff anyway? When did I learn it?
I feel like I've woken up clinging to the top of Mount Everest, and I don't even know what a crampon is. Heaving a huge sigh, I put the sheet down. I need to talk to someone. Fee. I lift the phone receiver and dial 352, which is her extension, unless they've changed the system.
Flooring department, Fiona Roper speaking.
Fee, it's me, I say. Lexi, listen, can we talk?
Of course, says Fee in formal tones. Do you want me to come in and see you now, or should I make an appointment with Claire?
My heart sinks. She sounds so remote. I just meant we could have a chat, unless you're busy.
Actually, I was about to go to lunch.
Well, I'll come too, I say eagerly, like old times. I could die for a hot chocolate. And does Morelli still do those great paninis?
Lexi.
Fee, I really need to talk to you, okay? I clutch the phone tighter. I don't remember anything, and it's freaking me out a bit, the whole situation.
I try to laugh.
Just hang on, I'll be out in a moment.
I thrust down the receiver and grab a piece of paper. I hesitate, then scrawl, Please action all these, Byron. Many thanks, Lexi. I know I'm playing right into his hands, but right now all I care about is seeing my friends. Seizing my bag and briefcase, I hurry out of my office, past Claire's desk and into the main flooring department.
Hi, Lexi, says a nearby girl. Did you want something? No, it's okay, thanks. I'm just meeting Fee for lunch.
I trail off. I can't see Fee anywhere in the office. Or Carolyn. Or Debs.
I think they've already gone to lunch.
The girl looks surprised.
You've only just missed them, though.
Oh, right. I try to hide my discomposure. Thanks. I expect they meant to meet in the lobby. I swivel on my heel, then walk as fast as I can in my spiky shoes along the corridor, just in time to see Debs disappearing into a lift.
Wait! I cry out, breaking into a run. I'm here! Debs!
But the lift doors are already closing. She heard me. I know she did. Thoughts are spinning wildly round my head as I shove open the door to the stairs and clatter down. They knew I was coming. Are they avoiding me? What the fuck has gone on these last 3 years? We're friends.
Okay, I know I'm boss now, but you can be friends with your boss, can't you?
Can't you? I arrive at the ground floor and almost tumble into the foyer. The first thing I see is Carolyn and Debs heading out of the main glass doors with Fee just in front of them.
Hi! I cry out almost desperately. Wait!
I pelt towards the glass doors and at last catch up with them on the front steps of the building.
Oh, hi, Lexi.
Fee gives a tiny snort, which I know means she's trying not to laugh.
I suppose I do look a bit incongruous, running along, red-faced in my black suit and chignon.
I thought we were going to have lunch together,
I say, panting.
I told you I was coming.
There's silence. No one is meeting my eyes. Debs is twiddling her long silver pendant, her blonde hair lifting in the breeze. Carolyn has taken off her glasses and is polishing them on her white shirt.
What's going on?
I try to sound relaxed, but I can hear a throb of hurt in my own voice.
Fee, why didn't you return any of my messages? Is there some kind of problem?
None of them speaks. I can almost see the thought bubbles travelling between them. But I can't read the thought bubbles anymore. I'm out of the loop.
You guys,
I attempt to smile. Please, you have to help me out. I've had amnesia. I don't remember. Did we have a row or something?
No.
Fee shrugs.
Well, I don't understand it.
I look around the faces entreatingly.
Last I remember, we were best mates, going out on a Friday night. We had banana cocktails. Loser Dave stood me up. We did karaoke. Remember?
Fee exhales sharply and raises her eyebrows at Carolyn.
That was a long time ago.
So what's happened since?
Look. Fee sighs. Let's just leave it. You've had this accident. You're ill. We don't want to upset you.
Yeah, let's just all go and get a sandwich together.
Debs glances at Fee as though to say, humour her.
Don't patronise me.
My voice is sharper than I meant.
Forget about the accident. I'm not an invalid. I'm fine. But I need you to tell me the truth.
I look around the group in desperation.
If we didn't have a row, what's wrong? What happened?
Lexi, nothing happened. Fee sounds awkward. It's just, we don't really hang out with you anymore. We're not mates.
But why not?
My heart is thudding, but I'm trying to stay calm.
Is this because I'm the boss now?
It's not because you're the boss. That wouldn't matter if you were.
Fee breaks off.
She shoves her hands in her pockets, not meeting my eye. If I'm honest, it's because you're a bit of a...
What?
I'm looking from face to face in bewilderment.
Tell me!
Fee shrugs. Snotty cow.
Total bitch boss from hell, more like,
mutters Carolyn. The air seems to freeze solid in my lungs. Bitch boss from hell? Me?
I don't understand.
I stammer at last.
Aren't I a good boss? Oh, you're great.
Carolyn's voice drips with sarcasm.
You penalise us if we're late. You time our lunch hours. You do spot checks on our expenses. Oh, it's a bundle of fun and flooring.
My cheeks are throbbing as though she's hit me.
But I would never. But that's not what I'm like.
Yeah?
Carolyn cuts me off.
It is.
Lexi, you asked. Fee is rolling her eyes like she always does when she's uncomfortable. That's why we don't hang out anymore. You do your thing and we do ours.
I can't be a bitch.
I manage at last, my voice trembling.
I can't be. I'm your friend. We have fun together. We go out dancing together. We get pissed.
Tears are pricking my eyes. I look around the faces I know so well, yet kind of don't, trying desperately to spark a chord of recognition.
It's me, Lexi, Snaggletooth. Remember me?
Fee and Carolyn exchange looks. Lexi, says Fee almost gently, you're our boss. We do what you say. But we don't have lunch, and we don't go out.
She hefts her bag onto her shoulder, then sighs. Look, come along today if you want to.
No, I say, stung. It's okay, thanks.
And with shaky legs, I turn and walk away. 10. I'm numb with shock. All the way home from the office, I sat in my taxi in a kind of trance. Somehow I managed to talk to Jana about the dinner party arrangements and listen to Mum when she called to complain about her latest run-in with the council. And now it's early evening and I'm in the bath. But all the time my thoughts have been circulating round and round. I'm a bitch boss from hell. My friends all hate me. What the fuck has happened? Every time I remember Carolyn's scathing voice, I flinch. God knows what I've done to her, but she obviously has no time for me. Have I really turned into a bitch over the last 3 years? But how? Why? The water is growing tepid, and at last I heave myself out. I rub myself briskly, trying to energize myself. I can't keep obsessing about it. It's already 6, and in an hour I have to host a dinner party. At least I don't have to cook. When I arrived home, Jana was busy in the kitchen with one of her nieces, singing along to the opera blaring out of the speakers. There were platters of sushi and canapes on every shelf in the fridge, and the most amazing smell of roasting meat. I tried to join in. I'm pretty good at garlic bread, but they bustled me away. So I decided I'd be safest in the bath. I wrap a fresh towel around myself and pad into the bedroom, then double back into the dressing room for my clothes. Jeez Louise, I know why rich people are so thin. It's from trekking round their humongous houses the whole time. In my Balham flat, I could reach the wardrobe from the bed, and the TV, and the toaster. I pick out a little black dress, some little black underwear, and some minuscule black satin shoes. There's nothing in my 2007 wardrobe which is big. No cuddly jumpers, no chunky shoes. Everything's slimline and tailored to match me. As I trail back into the bedroom, I let my towel drop onto the floor.
Hi, Lexi.
Ah!
I jump in fright. The big screen at the base of the bed has lit up with a huge image of Eric's face. I clap my hands over my chest and duck behind a chair. I'm naked, and he can see me. He's my husband, I remind myself feverishly. He's seen it all before. It's fine. It doesn't feel fine. Eric, can you see me? I say in a high-pitched, strangled voice.
Not right now. He laughs. Put the setting to camera.
Oh, okay, I say in relief. Just give me a sec.
I sling on a dressing gown, then quickly start gathering the clothes I've dropped about the room. Something I've learned pretty quickly is that Eric doesn't like things lying around on the floor, or on chairs, or basically any kind of mess at all. I shove them all under the duvet as quickly as possible, plonk a cushion on top, and smooth it down as best I can. Ready! I head to the screen and swivel the dial to camera.
Move back, instructs Eric, and I back away from the screen. Now I can see you. So, I've got one more meeting, then I'll be on my way home. Is everything set up for dinner?
I think so.
Excellent.
His huge pixelated mouth spreads in a jerky beam.
And how was work?
It was great.
Somehow I manage a cheerful tone. I saw Simon Johnson and all my department and my friends. I trail off, feeling a sudden burn of humiliation. Can I even describe them as friends anymore?
Marvellous.
I'm not sure Eric's even listening.
Now, you should really be getting ready. I'll see you later, darling.
Wait, I say on impulse. Eric?
This is my husband.
I may barely know him, but he knows me. He loves me. If there's anyone I should confide in about my problems, if anyone can reassure me, it's him.
Fire away.
Eric nods, his screen movements slow and jerky. Today, Fee said, I can hardly bring myself to say the words. She said I was a bitch. Is that true?
Of course you're not a bitch.
Really? I feel a pang of hope. So I'm not a horrible bitch boss from hell?
Darling, there's no way you're horrible or a bitch boss from hell.
Eric sounds so sure, I relax in relief. There'll be an explanation. Maybe some wires have got crossed. There's been a misunderstanding. It'll all be fine.
I'd say you were tough,
he adds. My relieved smile freezes on my face. Tough. I don't like the sound of tough. Do you mean tough in a good way? I try to sound casual. Like tough but still really friendly and nice.
Sweetheart, you're focused. You're driven. You drive your department hard. You're a great boss.
He smiles.
Now I must go. I'll see you later.
The screen goes dark and I stare at it, totally unreassured. In fact, I'm more alarmed than ever. Tough. Isn't that just another way of saying bitch boss from hell? Whatever the truth is, I can't let all this get to me. I have to keep everything in perspective. It's an hour later, and my spirits have risen a little. I've put on my new diamond necklace, I've sprayed myself with lots of expensive scent, and I've had a sneaky little glass of wine, which has made everything look a lot better. So maybe things aren't as perfect as I thought. Maybe I've fallen out with my friends. Maybe Byron is after my job. Maybe I don't have a clue who Tony Dukes is. But I can put it all right. I can learn my job. I can build bridges with Fee and the others. I can Google Tony Dukes. And the point is, I'm still the luckiest girl in the world. I have a gorgeous husband, a wonderful marriage, and a stunning apartment. I mean, just look around. Tonight the place looks even more jaw-dropping than ever. The florist has been and gone, and there are arrangements of lilies and roses everywhere. The dining table has been extended right out and laid for dinner with gleaming silverware and crystal and a centrepiece like at weddings. There are even place cards written out in calligraphy. Eric said it was a casual little supper.
God knows what we do when it's formal. Maybe have 10 butlers in white gloves or something.
I carefully apply my Lancôme lipstick and blot it. When I've finished, I can't help staring at myself in the mirror. My hair is up and my dress fits to perfection, and there are diamonds at my ears. I look like some elegant girl in an ad. Like any minute a caption will appear on the screen below me. Ferrero Rocher. For the finer things in life. British Gas. Keeping you warm in your million-billion-pound trendy loft apartment. I step back, and automatically the lights change from the mirror spotlight to more of an ambient glow. The intelligent lighting in this room is like magic. It works out where you are from heat sensors and then adjusts accordingly. I quite like trying to catch it out by running round the room and shouting, "Ha! Not so intelligent now, are you?" When Eric's out, obviously.
Darling.
I jump and turn to see him standing at the door in his business suit.
You look wonderful,
he declares. Thanks. I glow with pleasure and pat my hair.
One tiny thing. Briefcase in the hall. Good idea?
His smile doesn't waver, but I can hear the annoyance in his voice. Shit! I must have left it there.
I was so preoccupied when I arrived home, I didn't think. I'll move it, I say hastily. Sorry.
Good.
He nods.
But first, taste this.
He hands me a glass of ruby red wine.
It's the Chateau Branet du Cru. We bought it on our last trip to France. I'd like your opinion.
Right. I try to sound confident. Absolutely. Oh, no. What am I going to say? Cautiously, I take a mouthful and swill it round my mouth, racking my brain for all the wine buff words I can think of. Leathery, oaky, a fine vintage. Come to think of it, they're all just bullshit, aren't they? Okay, I'll say it's a divinely full-bodied vintage with hints of strawberries. No, blackcurrants. I swallow the mouthful and nod knowledgeably at Eric. You know, I think this is a div...
It's shocking, isn't it?
Eric cuts me off.
Corked. Totally off.
Off? Oh! Yes. I regain my composure. Way past the sell-by date. Ugh! I make a face. Revolting! That was a close shave. I put the glass down on a side table and the intelligent lighting adjusts again. Eric, I say, trying not to give away my exasperation, can we have our lighting mix which just stays the same all night? I don't know if that's possible.
Anything is possible.
Eric sounds a bit offended.
We have infinite choice. That's what loft-style living is all about.
He passes me a remote control.
Here, you can override the system with this. Pick a mood. I'll go and sort out the wine.
I head into the sitting room, find lighting on the remote, and start experimenting with moods. Daylight is too bright. Cinema is too dark. Relax is dull. I scroll much further down. Reading. Disco. Hey! We have disco lights! I press the remote and laugh out loud as the room is suddenly filled with pulsating, multicoloured light beams. Now let's try strobe. A moment later, the room is flashing black and white, and I gleefully start robotic dancing round the coffee table. This is like a club! Why didn't Eric tell me we had this before? Maybe we have dry ice too, and a mirror ball.
Jesus Christ, Lexi, what are you doing?
Eric's voice pierces the flashing room.
You put the whole fucking apartment on strobe light. Jana nearly chopped her arm off.
Oh no, sorry. Guiltily, I fumble for the remote and jab it until we're back on disco. You never told me we had disco and strobe lights. This is fantastic.
We never use them.
Eric's face is a multicoloured whirl.
Now find something sensible, for God's sake.
He turns and disappears. How can we have disco lights and never use them? What a waste. I have to have Fee and the others round for a party. We'll get some wine and nibbles, and we'll clear the floor and ramp up the volume and then my heart constricts as I remember. That won't be happening any time soon, or maybe ever. Deflated, I switch the lighting onto Reception Area 1, which is as good as anything else. I put down the remote, walk over to the window and stare out at the street below, suddenly determined. I'm not giving up. These are my friends. I'm going to find out what's been going on, and then I'm going to make up with them. My plan for the dinner party was to memorize each guest's face and name using visualization techniques. But this scheme disintegrates almost at once when three golfing buddies of Eric's arrive together in identical suits, with identical faces, and even more identical wives,
and names like Greg and Mick and Suki and Pookie. They immediately start discussing a skiing holiday we all apparently went on once. I sip my drink and smile a lot, and then about 10 more guests arrive at once, and I have no idea who anyone is except Rosalie, who dashed up, introduced her husband Clive, who doesn't seem like a monster at all, just a mild-mannered guy in a suit, and then rushed off again. After a bit, my ears are ringing and I feel dizzy. Jana is serving drinks, and her niece is handing out canapes, and everything seems under control. So I murmur an excuse to the balding guy who's telling me about Mick Jagger's electric guitar, which he's just bought at a charity auction, slip away and head out to the terrace. I take a few lungfuls of clean air, my head still spinning. A blue-grey dusk is falling, and the street lamps are just coming on. As I gaze out over London, I don't feel real. I feel like someone playing the part of a girl in a dress standing on a posh balcony with a glass of champagne in her hand.
Darling, there you are.
I turn to see Eric pushing the sliding doors open. Hi, I call back. I was just getting some air.
Let me introduce John, my architect.
Eric ushers out a dark-haired man in black jeans and a charcoal linen jacket. Hello, I begin automatically, then stop. Hey, we know each other, I exclaim, relieved to have found a familiar face. Don't we? You're the guy from the car. An odd expression flickers across the man's face, almost like disappointment. Then he nods.
That's right. I'm the guy from the car. John's our creative spirit, says Eric, slapping him on the back. He's the talent. I may have the financial sense, but this is the man who brings the world.
He pauses momentously.
Loft-style living.
As he says the words, he does the parallel hands sweeping bricks gesture again. Great. I try to sound enthused. I know it's Eric's business and everything, but that phrase, loft-style living, is really starting to bug me. Thanks again for the other day. I smile politely at John. You really saved my life. I turn to Eric. I didn't tell you, darling, but I tried to drive the car and nearly hit the wall. John helped me.
It was my pleasure.
John takes a sip of his drink.
So you still don't remember anything?
Nothing. I shake my head.
That must be strange for you.
It is, but I'm getting used to it. And Eric's really helpful. He's made me this book to help me remember. It's like a marriage manual, with sections and everything.
A manual? Echoes John, and his nose starts twitching. You're serious? A manual?
Yes, a manual. I stare at him suspiciously.
Ah, there's Graham.
Eric isn't even listening to the conversation.
I must just have a word. Excuse me.
He heads off inside, leaving me and John the architect guy alone. I don't know what it is about this man. I mean, I don't even know him, but he rankles me. What's wrong with the marriage manual? I hear myself demanding.
No, nothing. Nothing at all.
He shakes his head gravely.
It's a very sensible move, because otherwise you might not know when you were supposed to kiss each other.
Exactly. Eric's put in a whole section on... I break off. John's mouth is crinkled up as if he's trying not to laugh. Does he think this is funny? The manual covers all sorts of areas, I say rather stonily, and it's been very helpful for both of us. You know, it's difficult for Eric too, having a wife who doesn't remember the first thing about him, or perhaps you hadn't appreciated that. There's silence. All the humour has melted out of his face.
Believe me,
he says at last,
I appreciate it.
He drains his glass, then stares into the bottom of it for a few moments. He looks up and seems about to speak. Then, as the sliding doors open, changes his mind.
Blexi!
Rosalie comes tottering over towards us, glass in hand.
Wonderful canapes!
Oh, well, thanks, I say, embarrassed to be receiving praise for something I had absolutely nothing to do with. I haven't had any yet. Do they taste good? Rosalie appears perplexed.
I've no idea, sweetie, but they look marvellous. And Eric says dinner's about to begin.
Oh, God, I say guiltily. I've just left him to it. We'd better go in. Do you two know each other? I add as we start walking in.
Sure, says John.
John and I are old friends, says Rosalie sweetly. Aren't we, darling?
See you.
John nods, picks up his pace and disappears through the glass doors.
Awful man.
Rosalie makes a face at his departing back. Awful, I echo in surprise. Eric seems to like him.
Oh, Eric likes him, she says disdainfully. And Clive thinks he's the bee's knees. He's visionary and wins prizes, blah, blah, blah.
She tosses her head.
But he's the rudest man I ever met. When I asked him to donate to my charity last year, he refused. In fact, he laughed.
He laughed? I say, shocked. That's terrible. What was the charity?
It was called An Apple a Day, she says proudly. I thought the whole idea up myself. The idea was, once a year, we'd give an apple to every school child in an inner-city borough, full of lovely nutrients. Isn't that so simple? It's brilliant.
Great idea, I say cautiously. So, did it work out?
Well, it started off well, Rosalie says rather crossly. We gave out thousands of apples and we had special T-shirts and a van with an Apple logo to drive about in. It was such fun. Until the council started sending us stupid letters about fruit being abandoned in the street and causing vermin.
Oh dear. I bite my lip. The truth is, now I want to laugh.
You know, this is the trouble with charity work, she says darkly, lowering her voice. The local bureaucrats don't want you to help.
We've reached the sliding doors, and I, staring at the crowd. 20 faces I don't recognise are laughing and talking and exclaiming at each other. I can see jewels flashing and hear the rumble of men's laughter.
Now, don't worry.
Rosalie's hand is on my arm.
Eric and I have a plan. Everyone's going to stand up and introduce themselves to you at dinner.
Her brow wrinkles.
Sweetie, you look freaked.
No, I manage a smile. Not freaked. This is a lie. I'm totally freaked. As I find my place at the long glass dining table, nodding and smiling as people greet me, I feel like I'm in some weird dream. These people are allegedly my friends. They all know me, and I've never even seen them before.
Lexi, darling!
A dark-haired woman draws me aside as I'm approaching my chair.
Can I have a quick word?
She lowers her voice almost to a whisper.
I was with you all day on the 15th and the 21st, okay?
Were you? I say blankly.
Yes, if Christian asks. Christian, my husband?
She gestures at the balding Mick Jagger guitar guy taking his seat opposite. Oh, right. I digest this for a moment. Were we really together?
Of course, she says after a brief pause. Of course we were, darling.
She squeezes my hand and moves away.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Eric is standing up at the other end of the gleaming table, and the chatter dies to a hush as everyone sits down.
Welcome to our home. Lexi and I are delighted you could make it. All eyes swivel to me, and I give an embarrassed smile. As you know, Lexi is suffering the after effects of her recent accident, which means her memory's not too hot. Eric gives a rueful smile. A man opposite laughs, then is shushed by his wife. So, what I propose is that each of you reintroduces yourself to Lexi. Stand up, give your name, and maybe some memorable event that links you.
Do the doctors think this will trigger Lexi's memory?
Says an earnest-looking guy to my right.
No one knows, says Eric gravely, but we have to try. So who wants to start?
Me! I'll start! Says Rosalie, leaping to her feet. Lexi, I'm your best friend, Rosalie, which you already know, and our memorable incident was that time we both got waxed and the girl got a bit carried away.
She breaks into a giggle.
Your face?
What happened? Says a girl in black.
I'm not saying in public.
Rosalie looks offended.
But honestly, it was totally memorable.
She beams around the table, then sits down. Right, says Eric, sounding a bit taken aback. Who's next?
Charlie. I'm Charlie Mancroft.
A gruff man next to Rosalie stands up and nods at me.
I suppose our memorable incident would be the time we were all at Wentworth. That corporate do. Montgomery made a birdie on the 18th. Stunning play.
He looks at me expectantly. Of course. I have no idea what he's talking about. Golf? Or snooker, maybe? Thanks. He sits down and a thin girl next to him gets to her feet.
Hi, Lexi.
She gives me a little wave.
I'm Natalie, and my most memorable event would be your wedding day.
Really? I say, surprised and touched. Wow.
It was such a happy day.
She bites her lip.
And you look so beautiful, and I thought, that's what I want to look like when I get married. I actually thought Matthew would propose to me that day, but he didn't.
Her smile tightens.
Jesus, Natalie, mutters a guy across the table. Not this again.
No, it's fine, she exclaims brightly. We're engaged now. It only took 3 years.
She flashes her diamond at me.
I'm having your dress, exactly the same Vera Wang in white.
Well done, Natalie.
Eric chimes in heartily.
I think we should move on. John, your turn.
Across the table from me, John gets to his feet.
This ends Disc 5.